I would like to call to order the April 18th, 2024 Administrative Control Board meeting for Mountain Regional Water. Do we have any public here tonight?
We do not.
Okay. Do we need to go into executive session?
We do not.
Excellent. We've got the consent agenda. Does anyone have any changes to the meeting minutes?
None.
I have some changes, but Anna's already addressing them. Does anyone have any questions on the check registers?
I do.
Okay. Ian, would you like to start?
Thank you. Eminent Technical Solutions, those are the same folks that started helping us after the security breach at Signal Hill, right?
Yeah. Yes, there are IT consultants now.
Okay, cool. And then Flair, the piping that was done at Old Branch Road, can you remind us what that was? It was 26,000 about.
Yeah, so that was the first step in the mechanical work to retrofit that pump station with new surge protection. We expect kind of one more wave of work from the Flair folks, but fabrication work at Old Ranch.
Okay, cool. And then last one before a side comment, Electro Power Utah. Electrical services, treatment services, 6,190 on the 21st.
Yeah, that one didn't have a good description, but they were working on Skid D for the VFD.
There's a new VFD at Skid D.
Yeah, it was installed there.
At Lost Canyon Pump Station? Or
at treatment plant.
Okay, that's why it said treatment. Okay, got it. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. And then... do we have an acronyms list for all those, like the ETM and WIP, DST? Like,
I can put one together.
It might be helpful at the end, just because some of those are the same all the time. But I couldn't remember what WIP was. I think I've asked in the past. Sorry.
Work in progress.
Got it. Okay. But yeah, acronym list at the end would be helpful.
Okay.
That's it for me.
Glad I'm not the only one who hates me.
Yeah, no comment.
I had one check question on Nickerson. We had a pump repair. Was that at the treatment plant for $18,000?
Lost Canyon.
Lost Canyon.
One of the big ones in there.
And I saw that Anna's been here 20 years. So that's all I had. Did anyone else have any questions on the check register? Do we have a motion to approve the check register?
Motion to approve as discussed.
Actually, can we have a motion to approve the entire consent agenda?
Yeah, a motion to approve the entire consent agenda. Including the check register.
As thumbs up second.
Yeah. Okay, Joel's giving a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, that's unanimous. And do we have any purchase orders?
No, we didn't.
No purchase orders. All right, we're moving right along. Steve, your March results?
So we made it through the first quarter, and we are doing better than budgeted. It's a combination of being over on revenue and a little bit under on expenses. The overage on revenue is really coming from interest earnings. Since the Fed hasn't cut rates, we're still earning over 5.4% in our PTIP accounts. And then the other is our impact fees are running above budget. Basically because of the Parley School impact fee. They paid a large one of $115,000 and we're about $119,000 over. So we're also a little over in water sales, but overall looking pretty much what we expected, other than those two big variances. And then if you want to scroll down a little, Chris, go a little farther down. I've already talked about that. So you can kind of see in this chart here, the water sales about 120,000 over development related collections. That's the impact fees and other revenues where the interest is. We look at sales for the first quarter versus budget. You can see residential is higher than anticipated. There was a little bit of a good growth, let's say, at the end of the year. A lot of people converting over from standby to water connections, so that puts them into that category. And then, as we discussed before, the wholesale water is higher because of Utah Olympic Park, us wheeling more water to them than we usually do in January. Other than that, everything was pretty close to budget for the quarter. Expenses, we're doing well. I think we're budgeting this closer now, so we're only, you know, we're still under a little bit, but we're not giving ourselves a lot of leeway. We run it kind of tight to what we've said we expect to have happen. So we'll watch this during the year. We had some categories that were a little over, some a little under, but balancing out well right now. Let's go ahead and go down a little bit. So cash, as you saw last month, we're sitting on a lot more cash this year than we were last year because of the issuance of the bond. Our days cash on hand is still in a good position. The cash for the building and maintenance facility is in the other restricted cash, in that we can only use it for the building and the maintenance facility. So that's why that's classified down there. So that's the big difference from previous year. Let's see. Capital budget. This might be the first look, since it's a quarter report of the budget for this year. We had a lot of carryover. If you recall, the building was actually in last year's budget. We had to amend the budget when we issued the bond. So that's why that $20 million, almost $21 million spent is up there. You can see we've already spent almost $800,000 on the building between Oakland and CRSA, impact fees to everybody else. So the new projects for the old ranch that we were just talking about earlier, the 1.2, we started to spend money, flare construction, and some other things. And Lost Canyon, the valve we're putting in so that we can isolate and still send water to Promontory, even if it doesn't come all the way up to the pond. We bought the valve. We're looking at contractors getting bids right now to help for the installation. There's some engineering projects. Then down below is kind of some of those smaller projects we're going to be working on this year. And so looking good. Yeah, it's a big capital budget because now it's $28 million because of the building. We spent about we've got about $26 million left to spend. So when you think of, wow, they got $39 million, well, that's because we already have allocated out where we're going to spend $26 million of that.
Yeah.
All right, let's go ahead and move on down. Customer growth. Sorry if I'm going fast. If you have a question remotely, maybe let me know. Don't feel bad about interrupting. Okay. We're at 27 new connection requests so far this year. So 4 above last year, but still down from our 4-year average. Obviously 2021 and 2022 are going to skew that average for a couple more years.
Yeah.
Promontory seems like they're being able to pick up on lot sales a little bit. They were only at 5 last year. They're at 9 so far this year. So kind of a positive trend. We are kind of back to normal, I guess, is the best way to describe our customer growth now. Let's go ahead and go down a little bit.
What question on that one, Steve?
Yeah.
So new connections, 27, about the same as 2023, but our collections seem to be really high. What's the driver on that?
That was the school. That was because the $279,000 includes the $115,000 for the large impact fee for Parley's Park Elementary.
Oh, that was those additions we talked about last time. Okay, got it.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you.
Good question, though. That yeah. is an anomaly that we've got fewer connections but higher impact fee.
And we'll probably see another one from Trailside later this year.
Oh, that wasn't all of them. That was just for the one. So right. All the remodels are going to, well, all the ones that are in our district, we're going to get a bump.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay, cool.
On usage, if we look at the lower part of this table, you'll see, so our customers directly have used 228 acre feet. Last year was 229. The 4-year average is 227. Usage doesn't vary much early in the year. You'll see the Olympic Park, as we talked about before, they're higher than normal. Park City's taking a little less than they did last year. And then Summit Water is at 221 acre feet this year. Contracted amount dropped to 600 acre feet from 700 last year. And next year is the last year, and it's 500 acre feet next year. So, usage doesn't tell a big story until we get into summer months. Let's go ahead and scroll down a little bit. And then these are just the appendixes, the little more detail, the build up to the things I try to summarize a little more for you in the upper tables. I always include these in the quarterly report. And then also below, you'll see the cash kind of broken out a little bit. Yeah, next table down. By more specific accounts and things like that. Also just a little more detail of what builds up to everything you see in the tables. And the last one was the graph where we're running above water sales, which we expect because of the rate increase in growth. So April and May should be pretty predictable still. We should hit right above where we were last year. And then June will be where we really start to see what usage is looking like. So there you go.
Yeah, does it seem to be more rate increase or more growth or, you know, maybe 50-50?
It's a little more rate increase because our growth isn't as fast as our rate, as high as our rate increase was.
Yeah.
When we get to the audit, you'll see a growth for last year was about 4.9% and our rate increase was 8%.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
All right.
Great. Thanks, Steve.
You're welcome.
Did anyone have any questions on that? Otherwise, we will continue to move on. We're on to Sam.
So we recently completed all our supply and demand reporting for the 2023 water year. A big part of that is our involvement with the Summit County Concurrency Program. And we finished our data submission there as well. We haven't gone through and approved with the other systems in the basin to complete the concurrency program. We can give an update there. But one thing we do along with the effort that I think is helpful is we take a look at some basic metrics of all our groundwater sources across the district and kind of look at groundwater health and kind of put everything in one document. So it's an easy thing to share with the board just for reference information. So I include it in the board packet. And we can step through one example if you want to scroll down, Chris, to this cover letter page. Yeah, it's a good place to start. We don't have to go through every well, but Atkinson Well 2 is kind of illustrative of generally what's happening in the basin and in the Silver Creek drainage. If you go down a little bit more, Chris, you can blow up that scatter plot. Thanks. So this is what you'll find as a write-up for each of the wells, and then we'll have some narrative and all the charts following that kind of identify trends and point out anything that we kind of find interesting. But if you look at the chart, the gray and blue dots are water levels, and feet below ground surface are the right axis. So if a dot is further down on the page, that means it's further below the surface of the ground. So it's kind of like looking profile viewer from the side of a well. So that's kind of how it makes the most sense to me. So you can track water levels over time. So for example, when you see those groupings kind of in the middle of the scatter plot, that's a production season knocking water levels back and then them gaining back over time over the winter months. And you can kind of see a pattern developing. And starting around the end of 2020, start of 2021, Brian, we made some adjustments to our operation and we were able to get a pretty good recovery in water levels, which I think is a big improvement. And we're still seeing that in a lot of our sources today. One thing you will notice that even though we're improving our water levels, both when the wells are pumping and when they're static, and in some cases, the total dissolved solids or TDS levels continue to rise. We've talked about that at the board level too as well, where we think, you know, we're seeing increased fluorides, road salt is kind of working theory, especially in the Silver Creek Basin, that continue to drive TDS up. Which could be a problem for a lot of these wells in the future, even with reduced production and kind of recovering water levels. So we've got another year worth of data. All the charts are updated, and if you have any interest or time, you can review the rest of the wells. They're located in the as attachments to this part of the board packet.
Can I ask about when I read through this, the Blackhawk well? Why did that go from like doing 1.1 million gallons to 10 million gallons, or was that just?
Yeah, so that's
that should have been like 889%.
Totally. Yeah, yeah, Brian can add on, but there's a couple things with Blackhawk. So Blackhawk has actually always historically had elevated TDS, regardless of production. When I came onto the district, one of the things first, well, I don't know if it was a lot of first things, but early on, one of the things I remember working on was putting a blending plan in place for the well. So we're fortunate in that Atkinson well 2 and Blackhawk well 2 are just by, you know, it's just a happy accident. They're both in a position within the distribution system where we can easily blend them with other sources and show that how we're doing that to the state. So we can get an approved blending plan and utilize that source to a higher extent than it has in the past. So those are the two things I'd point out, Brian.
So the 10 million gallons of production in 2023 includes blended water?
It doesn't include blended water, but our ability to blend the water lets us use more water out of the well.
Got it. So we weren't blending necessarily in 19.
Yeah. So what Blackhawk's well
is using it more than what we're doing. So
yeah. So 2R is kind of an outlier for the overall story in the basin, actually, but that's a really good pickup.
Okay, but Atkinson we've reduced because we're letting the well recover.
That's the intent. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'd say Atkinson's kind of the maybe I don't want to say worse, but one of the more extreme stories of all the charts, and Blackhawk's kind of more I'd say more static, I guess. We're not seeing a lot of movement on the TDS levels there. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good pickup.
Yeah. Well, I always try and read the engineering stuff more carefully because I don't understand it as much. So,
yeah, if anybody has any questions, let me know. And they're just there for your reference. It's, yeah, not meant to be a homework assignment. But if you're worried about how the groundwater sources are behaving across the district, this is a good snapshot you can get through in 5 minutes.
Ian has his hand up.
Yeah, Ian.
Thanks. Okay, a couple questions. What's included in the entire concurrency review?
Okay. So
there's a comment that we could in review in its entirety potentially if we wanted.
Yeah. So yeah, quick background on that. Thanks, Ian. One step back. So concurrency in general is really just about making sure all the water providers have adequate supply for commitments that are on their books. And as part of that effort, we have gotten comments from the concurrency team about water quality in some of our wells. So that's kind of how this report originated. So after we have submitted our supply and demand and projection numbers to the concurrency team, they are currently reviewing those. And then it goes through a ratification process that'll get approved in about a month or so.
May 30th.
May 30th. Thanks, Andy. So after those concurrency reports and data are approved, happy to share those as well. But that process is currently underway. It's not completed for the year.
Okay. And was it that material that Dave Hansen decided he was interested in these five wells?
That's what started the discussion. Yeah, he identified those five wells, rising TDS levels, and commented on them through the concurrency program. And that's what kind of spurred our higher level of scrutiny on those well, the resulting work with Laughlin Water Associates to kind of understand it a little bit better, And then this annual effort that we take on to kind of see where we're at every year and see if we can make any improvements.
And did he do his own assessment of the increasing TDS, or did he have those exact figures that are in the document that was provided in the board packet? Because that's just a linear regression on TDS, right?
Yeah, nothing too fancy going on there. But yeah, he has no additional data outside of what we have provided.
All right. Has he mentioned anything about doing like a formal trend analysis, more along the lines of, you know, like the EPA typically requires for example, like any site that's included within Superfund, trend analyses on water quality are typically done with like a Mann-Kendall trend analysis or regression?
Mm-hmm. No.
Okay.
No, we have not gotten any additional guidance from Dave Hansen or the concurrency team.
We did have our first meeting of the year today, and Dave was very complimentary of the effort that Sam has put in to try to identify the sources of the TDS or why the TDS levels are increasing. One of the things that we're pretty confident is road salt is a major contributor. And so Nathan Brooks from the Board of Health has contacts now at the state level. We're going to start to try having conversations with them to see if there's some type of happy medium of them reducing the amount of salt brine that's put on the roads without decreasing the safety factor of not having anything on the roads during the winters.
Right on. Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, if Dave's concerned about all of these, I mean, some of those linear regressions to me looked like they might not pass a Mann-Kendall, might not statistically be increasing, based on how it bounces around and was fairly flat even at a linear level. So I don't know if that helps us at all. I mean, it's still, I think the work done is great and I love the graphics. They're really straightforward and that's how, yeah, if I was plotting up the data, how I would do it. But, just trying to look for ways that we could potentially narrow this down more, one other filter to assess whether we really have statistically increasing TDS or not. And then has he said anything about when he would want to see corrective action or more being done? I'm assuming it's at the 1,000 milligram per liter.
Yeah. Yeah, that's essentially it. We're in danger of losing a source at 1,000 milligrams per liter. So the state of Utah implements the EPA as a national secondary standard, and the way that Utah implements it is at 1,000 parts per million, you essentially have to prove or show that there is no other available better source to use. And secondly, you have to blend it in a manner with controls using a SCADA system or sampling points or whatever to come up with that solution. So if we ever got to the point where we have a well that's consistently above 1,000 parts that we're not able to easily put together a blending plan, then we could potentially lose that source, and then that would impact the concurrency reporting, obviously.
In your opinion, could we justify the no other source aspects? It sounds like you've got the blending piece down. You've got engineering to solve that, or you know, it might be more cost to us, but do you think you could justify the no other source piece?
It kind of be a case by case basis on which well we're talking about.
Yeah.
What things are looking like for the upcoming production season.
I will also say, Ian, that the other water providers in the basin are also experiencing higher TDS. But we are the only ones that are taking it to this level of trying to figure out why.
Well, I certainly appreciate that. But, I mean, you just look at where those sources are. And if it really is mostly a chloride hit, then we're probably in the hot seat, right? We're a lot closer to some major thoroughfares where I could see the state pushing back and not wanting to cut down on brine for, you know, safety of interstate commerce. So, this will I think we're in a harder spot than some other sources in the basin, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But yeah, awesome job, Sam. Really, yeah, thanks for plotting that up in such a detailed sense. That's awesome.
What was that, Ken?
Well, I was wondering if it was a spike because of the last 2 years being big winters.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting, too. Yeah, I don't have much insight on how a larger runoff would impact TDS and aquifer recharge. I don't know. Ian probably would have a better comment on that than I would.
Well, I mean, Karen's point's entirely valid. I mean, if there's more snow, there's more brine. And then with more snow, there's more recharge in the spring. There's more brine to move down through the aquifer. So it, you know, it doesn't like volatilize away or anything. So more snow, more brine.
There you go. Yeah, thanks for the comments, Ian.
Does anyone else have any questions on that? Okay, and it looks like we've got a consideration of approval. Oh, thank you. Consideration of approval of the district's drought level recommendation.
So we are asking the board or recommending to the board to adopt the drought response level 1, normal, the 2024 irrigation season. So at this point, we're in really good shape.
Fantastic.
Yeah, if that's your recommendation, I'm comfortable moving that ahead.
Do we need to make a motion on that?
Yes.
Okay. Ian, would you like to make a motion on that?
Sure.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Thanks, Corey. All in favor?
Aye.
Joel's giving thumbs up. Yeah.
Okay, great. Then it's unanimous. Let's hear about Rockport Lake Estates.
So a few weeks ago, and this is not the first time that people from Lake Rockport Estates have approached the district about potentially connecting the culinary system to the property. Do you have that map?
Yeah, just.
If you're not familiar where Lake Rockport Estates are, they're on the backside of Promontory. Currently, there are approximately 170 connections over there. It, for the most part, has been a seasonal community. There are some full-time residents over there. There are a potential of 330 lots that could be connected. They have relied on a single well, have recently drilled a second well. The second well is less productive than the first well. They, because of the nature of what Lake Rockport Estates was, they have very shallow water lines. A lot of the homeowners up there have underground water storage, 5,000 gallons, that sometimes they fill up once a year and they can make it through the season. We do have some people that have hydrant meters and they connect onto the fire hydrants to keep their water going. They have approached, because of the wells not being sufficient and because there's a desire to fully develop Lake Rockport Estates, they are asking us for consideration to allow them to annex into the district. And one of the things that we told them was we would get a feel from the board if the board felt like this is something that they would be amenable to. This is in eastern Summit County. It would require a water connection through Promontory. Promontory would have to agree to an easement. Initially, they were looking for just a wholesale connection as a Band-Aid, but if they were to annex into the district, we would need to have an actual connection and then have them become customers of the district. They have approximately 140 water rights on Weaver Basin Exchange contracts. They have one tank. They do have some fire hydrants, but they really don't maintain proper fire flow for what they have. So that's kind of the overview of what the current ask is. We are, they are engaging with Bowen Collins to do a master plan to see if it's feasible, where the potential connection would have to be and what other improvements would have to be made. They had previously been working with Jones and DeMille. So I don't know what the feeling of the board is about the potential connection annexation into the district would be. And Dave, I don't know if you have anything to add.
No, I mean, it's the same kind of process that was, that you would do, as was done with Stagecoach States and with the community water system.
So if the 300 properties annexed into the district, would everybody have to go with it? And anyone who was using like their own well or their own tank would jump in? And then would there be an impact fee?
For annexation, 100% have to vote in the affirmative to come on. And we would just have to figure out, you know, cost the district with, you know, they'd have to pay for it. They do currently have some USDA money, and apparently there is more USDA money available to them that may help the resolve some of the financial problems. You know, I think it's 8 miles of pipe they'd need to put in. I don't know what other type of PRB or other.
So if I could just think out loud for a minute and maybe pose more questions than answers, but is that 100%, is that on a plat by plat basis, or would that be for the entire annexation agreement for the whole development? Or could we be put in a position where, you know, Rockport Estates Unit 3 comes online, but Unit 1 had a holdout, so they didn't?
No, I think it's, as I think we told them, it's all or nothing. Because if you're going to put in this kind of infrastructure and
sure.
it, you're going to increase, I mean, based upon the infrastructure and a study by Bowen Collins that would have to be put in, you know, Mountain Regional may have to go to the, you know, the drinking water board to get, you know, a no interest or a low interest loan to allow all the improvements and then charge it against each of the lots. So it's got to be all or nothing. They're either in or they're out. They're currently.
And then the existing, we'll call it a mainline system that they have through the development, is that what is shallow, or is it the individual service drops that are shallow? Or is it kind of a wide unknown?
It's a wide unknown, but it's probably both.
Because my concern there would be that whatever deal is cut and whatever monies are brought in, all of a sudden Brian's going to have his team over there doing dig-ups every winter when they bring these lines online that have never been brought online in the winter.
No, that whole thing is probably going to have to be ripped out and start over.
Okay.
And that's something that we'd have to consider too. I mean, even though geographically it is close to the system, to get there, it does take a minute.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost right across the street from the cabin that we have, you know, where the intake is. But still, it would require some additional, may require additional staff. I don't know.
So would water have to be pumped up to the treatment plant and then back down to them? So there'd be a high elevation charge too, with anything,
oh, yeah,
right?
The treatment plant's usually treated as ground zero for pumping charges because everybody has to do their. So then if it's flowing down from there, they wouldn't necessarily.
There is an additional pump station.
Oh, there is. Oh, yeah, the West Hills one, right? Or Middle Valley.
West Hills tank, kind of in the north part of Promontory, is. What, 200 feet, 150 feet higher in elevation? I forget. We looked it up. than the tank for aquaporic state. So the general concept would be treat the water at Signal Hill, pump it up to the West Hills tank, have some sort of interconnection, and water could gravity flow from the West Hills tank to the Rockport Estates.
And we did provide contact to Promontory, to the Lake Rockport people, because that's a big piece of this as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, as Dave was saying, is if any monies are borrowed, they would be paying an assessment to repay that, so it doesn't burden current customers of the district. Much like the Stagecoach customers pay $143 a month over 20 years to basically pay for their upgrades, and the community water customers pay $26.50 a month to pay to bring their deficiencies. These guys' deficiencies are probably larger and over a smaller base than community water, for example. So they're going to have a pretty big hit to each lot, which might hurt their chances of getting 100% vote on the annexation. So there's some pretty good hurdles they're going to have to clear internally.
And then they have to weigh being out of water.
Yeah, well, and it hasn't been that long ago where they had all the fires down there, right?
Right.
From a public safety standpoint, it certainly seems to be something that I would think that they would want.
Yeah. Well, and insurability of their.
Right. Yeah. They probably can't even get insurance over there. How do you guys as a staff feel about annexing these guys?
Not knowing all of the variables. We're probably, 49-51. I mean, we think it's doable. We know it would be work and potential headache. So I got a first phone call from the engineer, Jones DeMille. Then I also got a call from the county manager. So it's being talked about more seriously now than it probably has been in the past. And I think Ian's got his hand up.
Yeah, thanks. I was just going to ask, other than an impact fee to help us with the money we'll need to improve their whole system, what do they bring to the table? Do they have any, they obviously don't have enough wet water, but do they have any rights that would be advantageous to us, or are they pretty much just a burden?
I mean, yeah, they have, I think they said they have 140 acre feet. We have plenty of rights in the district. We need source. And of course, we don't always have a choice of who we serve and don't serve. So.
Is this one of those cases?
I think it's leaning that way.
Okay.
It is a little bit different in the sense that when Mountain Regional was formed, the idea is that it would be the water provider of last resort in the basin. And they specifically did not have it go out into Eastern Summit County.
Although Promontory is technically Eastern Summit
County. Yes, yeah, it's technically Eastern Summit County, but they've kind of generally drawn the line. If this gets serious enough for Rockport Estates, the county council may change that directive and want Mountain Regional to go outside its normal service.
If that was the case, would they still have to have 100% vote for annexation?
Still need 100% vote because, all of those plats were relying upon that water source, and you would take over that water source. So it's got to be 100%.
Yeah, and so from that perspective, Ian, there are two wells. They're just not enough to meet the demand. And
I guess my question was going to be, are we at last resort definition at this point? With the geologic terrain they're in, they're not going to make much from wells, but those wells also aren't going to have a big cone of depression or area of influence associated with them. So I would think they need to put a couple more straws in the ground before I would define it as last resort. I mean, they've only taken two shots at it, and it's horrible terrain, but I would think they would need to at least put a couple more assets in the ground before I defined it as last resort.
Yeah, do they even have reliable snow removal up there?
I don't think the roads are paved.
Well, they're not paved. I remember showing somebody's property out here, and it was kind of a, you know, one of the neighbors does the, you know, owns the plow, and then everybody kind of pays them back. And I'm just wondering if, you know, if we had a situation up there in the winter, or is it even, you know, if we think Summit Park is hard, that this could be even harder, because you'd have to kind of go, I don't even know if you'd be able to cut through Promontory to get down there. You'd have to go around, right?
We had a repeater in there to talk to Lost Canyon, and I had to go up there in the middle of the night in winter, and it's not a lot of fun.
Could that be part of our impact assessment to meet our minimum standards as a district? There needs to be a paved surface so we can safely get in there to do reclamation work in the winter.
Yeah, I mean, you can put in any conditions that you want in the annexation.
I would like that one. I think having our crews go out on dirt roads that are barely plowed and doing work in the winter, that's just asking for people to quit.
Yeah, so we are just at the very, very preliminary. Hydraulically, we have to figure it out how feasible it is. And we don't anticipate anything back from Bowen Collins until, I think, December is approximate. So we're still several months away. So is the board in favor? Does the board want, or does the board have some interest, or is it dead? Would it require your initial approval to move it forward?
Wait, it does require our approval to move forward?
Well, you have to make the recommendation for annexation to the council.
Yeah, nothing tonight. We're talking just future.
I was going to say, we certainly wouldn't do that tonight. I mean, I would vote no right now.
if the board is not in favor of moving forward, then it just kills this whole deal. If you're willing to go down the road and see what the Bowen Collins report says, and then if that's favorable, they are then going to have to go back and get 100% approval of all their lot owners to do the annexation. So I think there's several more hurdles that we'd have to go through.
Who's leading the charge over there?
Spike.
Yeah, it's kind of, I don't know if they really have a president of the HOA.
Okay, you're not helping matters.
I can't remember who
Evan on the road.
Is it an individual? Is it a group of individuals? Is it a credible group of individuals?
Well, I can't speak to credibility.
I'm curious to know how serious of an issue this is on their side of things. Like, have they polled their property owners to say, hey, are you willing to drop the $60,000 to $100,000 that it's going to cost to, you know, on a per lot basis to dig up the infrastructure we have?
Yeah,
there's a valid chance that, you know, this just doesn't even pass muster because some of the property owners don't have the cash or aren't willing to think about it.
Yeah, that's a good comment. I just say, based on the group we're dealing with, they seem very serious. And we threw some big scary numbers just back the napkin at them, you know, $10 million kind of numbers, and I didn't blink would be my.
Well, and about $75,000 for Bowen Collins to just complete the study.
But yeah, Greg Warner is the vice president of their board of trustees. They have a fairly large board, and he's kind of been the closest thing to a spearhead. He's not the president of the HOA Board of Trustees.
I mean, at $10 million, you're looking at $30,000 a lot. Does that seem Is that kind of the back of the napkin number you guys are working with?
That's what stage controls.
That's ballpark of ripping out every foot of water line in there. Fucking bad.
Yeah, but what
that's laterals as well, or that's just mainline?
Just mainline.
Because I think it would be.
Am I thinking of the wrong place?
I understand that we don't own, you know, the services, but like.
You live in 2010.
Now I'm,
you know, if your main line is at 3 feet deep, and you're paying the money to, you know, the 30 grand to put a new main line in, you'd probably better drop the extra five to fix your lateral drop.
Yeah, no, agreed.
It would be to our standards, up to the meter, so.
I think they're fairly motivated because they've put a moratorium on building for their HOA. I don't think it's county induced. I think it's self-induced, right?
Yeah.
And I think most of those people, they don't have water in the winter. Like, they shut it off. So, no water. Hydrant, nothing. So, it's more motivated.
Yeah, I think it's to Corey's point, though. Are there 15 of them who still just use it as a summer cabin, and they're not wanting to invest another $60,000 or $80,000 into their summer cabin? Because they're fine just having a tank that they can go up and spend a couple weekends in the summer.
I have those people.
So that's, and that would keep them from hitting 100%.
Yeah, and I've met a few people who do live up there year round, and, you know, they kind of relish in the hardship.
Yeah. Like, they'd say no just to not have anybody else build up there, right?
Right.
Well, I think there's definitely going to be one of those, you know. Somebody's going to have to go door to door and really do some.
Oh, it's more than door to door. It's all the lots that don't have doors on them. I think that's going to be
your and those are the ones that I'm, you know, worried is the wrong word, but those are the ones that I think are going to pose the biggest problem is if somebody bought a lot up there 10 years ago and they're just sitting on it, they could care less.
But if there's full-time active water up there, what they paid 10 years ago, the value increases exponentially because there is full-time year-round water. So they could be sitting on a gold mine.
If that comes with full-time year-round pavement and full-time year-round lots of things, you know. I agree. I just think that there's going to be a kind of a big internal debate, and I have a hard time believing they're going to get past their own selves.
So is the board against going down this road, or are they willing to wait and see what Bowen Collins comes back with, knowing there's other hurdles, including the council having to agree to this ultimately?
I'd be interested in the council's direction. And then, second after that, the Bowen and Collins report. And then after that, I would want to firmly have assurances that it would meet all of our current conditions for maintaining systems. So all the infrastructure, mainline, laterals, paved roads, everything.
Dave, can
we... as well as funding to not just paving the roads, but some sort of mechanism in place so that those roads would always be paved. Because the county's not going to go in and do it. So they need their own dollars to be able to rehab those surfaces through time.
Could they turn those roads over to the county?
They'd have to come up to county road standards right
before
now.
Before they could do that.
Right now, they would, you know, those are rural road standards. They have to bring them up and pay for the cost of that. I mean, we've done that before in other subdivisions where we brought them up, had a voluntary assessment district in the area to do that. But once again, voluntary assessment district means everybody has to be on board. If you don't have anyone that's not on board, you can't do it. Under the statute now, you can only do that in circumstances with sewer when there's an emergency. You can then force, you know, it used to be that you could, you know, you, you could have an involuntary assessment area, you know, where you could force everybody on. And they got rid of those except in unique circumstances. And sewer failure is one of those unique circumstances, but water is not, and neither are roads.
So Ian's point about finding out the council's feeling now, right, Ian? I think that's what you said before, Bowen Collins. How do we approach that?
I mean, I'd first approach Rockport Estates, their HOA, and see if they're willing to go in with you to a work session at the county council just to, you know, take everybody's temperature.
Okay.
Knowing that there's still a lot that has to be done, and it may not be possible because maybe the hydrology is not right and you're not going to be able to do what you thought you were going to do, or Promontory doesn't want to give an easement, or, you know, any number of things, not the least of which is if there are members of the HOA that just don't want to do it. They don't want to do the cost.
Is now the right time to have that discussion? Or
I would have that discussion before Rockport Estates puts in a lot of extra money into evaluating something if it has no chance. And if it's, and if Ian's right and the council says, hey, we don't think this last resort yet, drill another couple of wells and see what happens. That's probably a better use of their money than doing a big study to see if they're compatible with Mountain Regional.
And it potentially gives them more time to talk to all the plat owners. I mean, I'm not hearing that they've done that yet. And man, 100%, you know, living in Summit Park, where they've been trying ever since I moved in, you know, the early 2000s, they've been trying to get a bunch of the plats added to the HOA, and they've never been able to get, I think they need 75% there. And a lot of times it's those lots that don't have people on them. I understand your point, Andy, that value goes up with certain things, but there's also those set of people that they don't want to be part of that. And all you need is one of those in this neighborhood and it doesn't go through. That sounds really like almost like a non-starter to me.
Yeah, I think my position at this point is I don't have enough information to want to be a roadblock. I'm more than happy to tell them to keep moving forward, but I think it'll die somewhere between here and there.
Yeah, I certainly don't think the time and the resources that you guys are spending on it is worth putting too much time or effort into it at this point.
Okay. I will get a hold of Greg and see if he's willing to come to go to the council. Then we can see what their feeling is.
Joel, do you have any thoughts? He's muted.
Joel, you're muted.
You know, I think we need to wait and get more information. I guess I'm like Ian and Mr. Shorkey. I think it's too premature to do anything until we get more information.
Okay, so I feel like we're all on the same page with this. And I feel like Mike would probably be as well. So.
Okay.
Do we need to make a formal,
no,
you know, thumbs up or thumbs down, no, at this point?
This is just informational, kind of give direction. But I'll see if Rockport State's not willing to go to the council, then it's definitely dead.
Yeah.
It's okay. Interesting that they would even be willing to pay Bowen Collins $75,000 without having done some kind of polling within their own organization. Like, if they're only getting half of them, why even spend their $75,000?
Because it's USDA money.
Oh, because they already have it. I got you.
Yeah.
Well, part of me wonders if there's a slippery slope here. You know, you've got this, and then you've got the Hoytsville project. Where's their water coming from?
Look at these.
No. All right. So that was very interesting. And then I guess, do you have any other general manager?
I do. Andy? I do. So Kim Richens, who's been one of the first employees of the district, is retiring. His formal retirement date with the district will be May 1st. He previously worked for the county in Colville, so he has almost 30 years in. So he will be leaving us. He currently works down at Lost Canyon. We are having an open house for him on Monday. If you have a minute to stop by and say hi to Kim, it will be 11:30 to 1 or 12 to 1:30.
11:30
to
1. Is that Monday the 22nd or Monday the 29th?
This coming Monday, the
22nd. Okay.
This all came together pretty quickly. And Kim is not one for much attention, so we kind of forced him into this. We also continue to work on the asset management plan. We had a representative of Jacobs come in and do some preventive maintenance training. We had that a couple weeks ago. That was really interesting and helpful information. He got into the weeds a lot, but it gave us food for thought on how we approach things. And so the people that are on the asset management committee are working to, they don't call it a CMMS, they call it a
EAM.
Sorry, we got acronyms here. So we're working toward identifying a system that will end up feeding other parts of the system in, and hopefully identifying a new financial software as part of that program. We have, we will be bringing back 5 summer help this summer, the first of which should start beginning of May, and then once school gets out, the other few will be joining us. We do not have our building permit as of yet. We were waiting for the fire department for their final review, and then the planning department has to do their final review. But Mike Owen had been out on spring break last week, so hopefully that will get wrapped up beginning of next week. And then Oakland will mobilize on May 6th. Putting a foundation should be May 13th, with Wardell Brothers doing all the excavation over there. They have excavated for the shop and the administration building. If you have a chance to go over there, you can see the footprint of where those two facilities are. That's all I have.
Wow, well, that's exciting. So are we still having the groundbreaking?
May 23rd.
May 23rd.
Which is our next board meeting.
Great. And then the last thing was questions on department updates. Did anyone have any questions on the department updates?
I had one for Sam. Thanks for the little note on PFAS. Any other insights or thoughts since you put that together?
Just regarding the current state of the district groundwater sources?
Mm-hmm.
No real updates. You know, we're continuing to do our quarterly sampling on any well that's in the Atkinson zone. And I'll feel a lot better, I think, after having a year's worth of data. We've got 2 sets of really good data points in addition to the UCMR data, and they've essentially corroborated everything that Jess compiled and previously presented to the board. So not a lot of new information there. We continue not to use tank well 16. We're just in a spot where we can luckily walk away for that from the time being until we understand that a little bit better.
And did everyone see the EPA fact sheet on PFAS that I sent back on April 10th?
Yes. So RO gets rid of it. Is that true? That was kind of in that, I don't know, it was kind of a public relationsy type thing, like, you know, that you could counteract it with GAC, RO, or
ion exchange
systems.
Yeah, those are the big three. Yep. And they'd all have their own challenges. But yeah, for us, treating at a single well, like a point of use or point of application treatment style system would be challenging. I guess one other quick update is the rule went final, but it hasn't been signed in the Federal Register, so the dates aren't finalized for compliance, but they're still years out regardless. And then one other just basin-wide issue is it sounds like the state of Utah is amenable to allowing blending as a treatment option for PFAS. So that essentially solves Park City's groundwater PFAS problems if they choose to blend as a solution. Because I think my understanding is they're in a position to do so. So there's a little tidbit, I guess.
All right. And then on the tank well, are we still pursuing someone doing remediation there or looking into options for us?
Yeah, I think so. Honestly, it hasn't been a front burner type issue, Ian, being honest.
It's not big enough of a source to, yeah, throw that type of money at yet, I guess. Okay.
But it's certainly, it's certainly worth pursuing, not just giving up on the well.
Cool. That's it for me.
Ryan still wins for the best pictures this month.
All right.
Do we have any other questions or would somebody like to make a motion to adjourn?
I can make a motion to adjourn.
All right. Do we have seconds?
Ian, you still have like 8 minutes.
All right, all in favor? All right, we're adjourned at 7:02. Hopefully you can get back to your families now. Thank you.